Hello, 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 and welcome to the Bible Gumshoe Podcast, the podcast dedicated to answering tough questions about the Bible and its origins. I'm your host and resident Bible detective, Nicholas LeMay, and today we're going to delve into a question that my wife asked me this last Sunday when we were driving to church. She says, "So, where in the Bible does it say that Satan fell from heaven?" I think what she had in mind was probably Isaiah 14, verse 12 and following. We're going to look at this, and we're going to look at it from a number of different perspectives. So I'm going to start with this question. Did the devil really fall from heaven? If you're listening and you have a Bible handy, open it up to Isaiah 14. Now, if you're driving, please don't do this. And we're going to look not at the whole thing, but we're going to look from basically verse 12 to verse 20, verse 21. But something we should understand first about this whole section is that this is a taunt song. Now, a taunt song is a special literary genre in the Old Testament that expresses public humiliation over the ill fortune of a group or an individual. In Isaiah's song, he is shaming the king of Babylon, taunting the king of Babylon, mocking the king of Babylon. Because of the king of Babylon's pride, he thinks he's going to be a god, and yet God brings him down to Sheol. So taunt songs, and not only Isaiah's taunt song, but other taunt songs as well. For example, the taunt song found in Habakkuk 2:19 and following. These taunt songs shame the proud. They highlight God's power and God's sovereignty, and they convey the advance of God's kingdom over the kings of the earth, over the proud in heart. Now, in modern, what I'm going to call modern Lucifer mythology, that is, what today people commonly believe about the devil, about where he comes from, about how he became the devil, about what he does, who he is, what he looks like, all of this that's been ingrained in our culture, and not just historically, but now even in Hollywood and in books and in comics and in other cultural lore, we have this idea about the devil. But my question is, and what I want to explore with you here today, does the Bible support this cultural lore, this Lucifer myth? And more specifically, does Isaiah 12 support the Lucifer myth? Now, part of that cultural heritage that we've inherited is that Lucifer was created as the most brilliant angel in God's heavens. Before he created man, before even he created the earth, God created the angels, and he created Lucifer as the most glorious of all angels. And Lucifer wasn't content to be the most glorious of all angels. He wanted to be God. He wanted to take God's seat on his throne. He wanted to rule the cosmos in place of the Most High. And so God cast him out of heaven. God didn't cast him out of heaven alone, of course. God cast Lucifer out of heaven with a third of the angels. So where does this come from? And specifically, does it come in any way, shape, or form from Isaiah 14? Well, to start with, we can trace this Lucifer myth to the church fathers, to some of them, not all of them. For example, Hippolytus writes in his treatise on Christ and Antichrist, and that the case stands thus, I'm quoting now, "We see also from the words of Jacob, let Dan be a serpent lying upon the ground, biting the horse's heel. What then is meant by the serpent but Antichrist, that deceiver who's mentioned in Genesis, who deceived Eve and supplanted Adam? But since it is necessary to prove this assertion by sufficient testimony, we shall not shrink from the task." And then he quotes Isaiah, "How thou art fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning. He is cast down to the ground, who sends off all the nations." Now, he also quotes other texts. For example, Ezekiel 28, texts from Job, among others. Origen, in De Principis, in Book 1, Chapter 5, writes, "Most evidently by these words is he shown to have fallen from heaven, who formerly was Lucifer, and who used to arise in the morning." What words is he talking about? He's speaking about Isaiah 14, 12 and following. "For if," continues Origen, As some think, he was a nature of darkness. How is Lucifer said to have existed before? Or how could he arise in the morning, who had in himself nothing of the light? In this manner, then, did that being once exist as light before he went astray and fell to this place and had his glory turned into dust. Now, Origen and Hippolytus aren't the only ones. Even Augustine, in his book, The City of God, Book 9, Chapter 15, speaks of Satan, quoting Isaiah, Ezekiel, and Job, and he says, "But these passages are not to lead us to suppose that the devil was originally created to be the sport of the angels, but that he was doomed to this punishment after his sin. His beginning, then, is the handiwork of God, and there is no nature, even among the least and lowest and last of all the beasts, which was not the work of him from whom is proceeded all measure, all form, all order, without which nothing can be planned or conceived. How much more, then, is this angelic nature, which surpasses in dignity all else he, speaking of God, has made, the handiwork of the Most High." There we have some early Christian witnesses to what later in the Middle Ages became much more developed in terms of what today we understand as the origin stories of Satan. Where might these early fathers have gotten such ideas? Well, there is one possible source that has been proposed as underlying this idea of the fall of Satan. And that's a book dating, well, it's difficult to date it. Some people date it from the first century, others as late as the 10th century. But this is the book of 2nd Enoch, which I'm sure all of you are reading for your daily devotions, right? No, probably not. 2nd Enoch, also known as Slavonic Enoch or the Secrets of Enoch, is a book which tells a story of Enoch being taken up into heaven and God shows him many visions. It's an apocalyptic book. Since we only have medieval manuscripts, it's really difficult to judge the date of the original composition. That's why they give a date between 1st and 10th century. But let's just say it was written early. And we can find a possible origin to the story of Satan's fall from heaven in 2 Enoch 29. It's only four verses, but I'll read from verse 2 to 4. It says, "And from the rock I cut off," now God is speaking here, "I cut off a great fire, and from the fire I created the orders of the incorporeal 10 troops of angels." So God created from a rock, he cut off a great fire, and from this fire he created 10 troops of angels, and their weapons are fiery, and their raiment a burning flame. And I commanded that each one should stand in his order. And one from out of the order of angels, having turned away with the order that was under him, conceived an impossible thought, to place his throne higher than the clouds above the earth, that he might become equal in rank to my power." So here's one angel, and together with his troop, he rebels against God, and he has this insane idea to make his throne higher than God's, to become equal in rank to his creator. And verse 4 says, "And I threw him out from the height with his angels, and he was flying in the air continuously above the bottomless." This is a possible origin for what later in Christian tradition develops into the story of Satan's creation and fall. In 2 Enoch 31, we also read that he was continuously in paradise, speaking of Adam. "And the devil understood that I wanted to create another world, because Adam was the Lord on earth, to rule and control it. The devil is the evil spirit of the lower places. As a fugitive, he made Satona from the heavens, as his name was Satanael. Thus he became different from the angels, but his nature did not change, his intelligence as far as his understanding of righteous and sinful. And he understood this condemnation and the sin which he had sinned before. Therefore, he conceived thought against Adam. In such form, he entered and seduced Eva, but did not touch Adam." So, here we have both an early Christian thought, and perhaps even before that in the book of 2 Enoch, would seem to be the beginnings of what later get developed into a very canonical form of the Lucifer myth, especially in the works of Dante's Inferno and Milton's Paradise Lost. This is the canonical story as it's come down to us through early Christian thought, the Middle Ages, and then through important works like Paradise Lost and Dante's Inferno. And you can hear it. If you were to Google this, you could watch a myriad videos, right, explaining the origins of Satan. Listen to just two of them, real short clips, and you'll get the flavor and idea of what you've already heard a million times in any number of different formats, in movies, books, even in church.
According to most interpretations of the Bible, Lucifer was an angel of God. The name Lucifer means bright morning star. Lucifer was close to God, but turned from God because of his pride. Lucifer had a throne of followers, presumably in heaven and on earth. He had rebellion in his heart and wanted to be like God and overthrow God. He was later addressed as Satan, which means adversary or opponent. How you have fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning. How you are cut down to the ground, you who weaken the nations. For you have said in your heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will also sit on the mountain of the congregation, on the farthest sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. Yet you shall be brought down to Sheol, to the lowest depths of the pit. Those who see you will gaze at you and consider you, saying, Is this the man who made the earth tremble, who shook the kingdoms, who made the whole world as a wilderness and destroyed its cities, who did not open the house of its prisoners? Son of man, take up a lamentation for the king of Tyre.
Why did Satan fall from heaven? Satan fell because of pride. He desired to be God, not the servant of God. Notice the many I will statements in Isaiah 14:12-15. Ezekiel 28:12-15 describes Satan as an exceedingly beautiful angel. Satan was likely the highest of all angels, the anointed cherub, the most beautiful of all of God's creation. But he was not content in his position. Instead, Satan desired to be God, to essentially kick God off his throne and take over the rule of the universe. Satan wanted to be God, and interestingly enough, that is essentially what Satan tempted Adam and Eve with in the Garden of Eden.
Well, great. I think you get the idea. So let's go back to the text, because the real question is, does the text support the cultural idea of Satan, his origins, his fall? Going back to the text, scholars have come up with three possible understandings of what's going on here. Scholars typically, I call these canonical theories about what's going on in Isaiah 14, in Isaiah's Tansan. And that is, scholars, what they're looking for is background material. What lies behind Isaiah's Tansan to help us understand the different images and metaphors that Isaiah is using? Well, three things have been proposed. The first is a Greek mythological background to Isaiah's Tansan. The other is a Ugaritic or Canaanite mythological background, and finally a Mesopotamian mythological background. The Greek mythological background theory looks mostly for comparisons with the story of Helios and Clemene, who was reported in his ambitious daring to have tried to drive his father's chariot, the sun, with its horses of fire through the clouds. Of course, because he exceeded his abilities and was about to destroy the cosmos, Zeus had to stop him by hurling a lightning bolt at him, causing him to plummet to the ground. While we have certain elements in common, like clouds, shiny things, and a big crash to the ground, it's highly unlikely that the Greek mythological story of Helios and Clemene lie behind Isaiah's Tansan. And most scholars agree with that. Most scholars think that it's very ill-advised to try to force Greek mythological categories into ancient Hebrew or Canaanite categories. So we don't have the same thing going on here. Another theory proposed is the Mesopotamian mythological theory. So particularly what's in mind here is the Akkadian myth of Ishtar's descent into the netherworld. Now, Ishtar, the goddess of fertility, decides she's going to descend into the netherworld to visit Eriskigal, her sister. Well, Eriskigal's a real prize. So when she gets, you know, this happens in families. We all know this. This is a dysfunctional family. Ishtar and Eriskigal's family is terribly dysfunctional. So when Ishtar descends into the netherworld, Eriskigal does not want to let her go. So she keeps Ishtar, her sister, down there like she was a prisoner. Is this starting to sound like a soap opera to you? Well, at any rate, this is not good for things up here because, you know, if the goddess of fertility is locked away, well, you know, we don't have crops, we don't have economy, we don't have babies. That's all bad. So Ea has to go down into the netherworld and intervene. And Ea persuades Eriskigal to allow Ishtar to return. It's highly unlikely that this Mesopotamian myth lies behind Isaiah's Tansong, and for a lot of reasons. Although we can see a descent into Sheol or a descent into the underworld, Ishtar is a goddess, and the deity overtones in the Isaiah Tansong are most certainly male. Ishtar also descends into the netherworld of her own free will. She doesn't get cast into the netherworld. She goes down there. And she's not down there long because she wants to be. She's down there because her sister's keeping her hostage. And she does end up returning, unlike the morning star, son of the dawn, in Isaiah's Tansong. So the differences here are pretty pronounced. Now, there's another school of thought that says that there's Ugaritic or Canaanite mythology lying behind this. That, for example, the god Atar had the epithet the Luminous. There's also language in the Isaiah Tansong, the mountain assembly, which in Canaanite and Ugaritic mythology would have been the meeting place of the gods. We also see this in Greek mythology, of course. Mount Olympus is the meeting place of the gods as well. This mountain assembly was often thought to be in the north and was synonymous with the heavens. Even Mount Zion in the Bible, God's holy mountain, is associated with the north. So there do seem to be a number of parallels here. All the talk about riding on the heights of the clouds. Baal, for example, was a god who rode the clouds. So there do seem to be parallels. And the typical thought is that the Hebrew expression that we find here, Hillel ben Shachar, Hillel, son of the dawn, is a reference to the planet Venus, which would appear and then disappear in the sky. Hillel is the word that is translated as day star. Now, it's a hapax legomenon. And what that means is that it appears only once within the canonical writings of the Old Testament. So we only find it here. And it is probably derived from its verbal form, halal, which means to shine. So Hillel could mean shining one. And is certainly used here as an epithet for the king of Babylon. But halal, the verb that means to shine, can also have another meaning, and that is to be boastful. So Hillel is not just the shining one, but he is the boastful one. And that's in the text too. So he says in his heart, I will ascend to the heavens above the stars of God. I will make myself like the Most High. It's in fact his pride which causes his fall into Sheol. So more than likely, there's a double entendre going on here. There is Hillel, the shining one, who is also the boastful one. His pride brings him down. But does this text refer to the devil? Or, to put it a different way, does this text refer to Lucifer? Well, the term Lucifer doesn't actually appear in the Old Testament, nor does it appear in the New Testament. In fact, it's not a Greek or Hebrew term at all. Rather, it's a term that comes from the Latin, and it's a translation of the Greek term used in this text for morning star, which has reference to the planet Venus. So in the Latin Vulgate, the term for morning star is translated as Lucifer, which means bearer of light. but it isn't used as a proper name. In other words, it's not used to refer to the person or being Lucifer. It's used to refer to the planet Venus, the morning star. In fact, it didn't become a proper noun until later in the Middle Ages, where this whole concept of Lucifer as a being becomes canonical in our culture. So if Hillel isn't referring to Lucifer, that is, Satan, what is it talking about? Well, we've already looked at the three different canonical theories with regard to this text, but there's another theory that I'd like to discuss, and that's Laura Quick's theory. She's from Princeton University, and she comes up with this idea that reference to the morning star isn't the most appropriate reference for Hillel, the shining one, but rather to the sun. In fact, she says it would have been very inappropriate, and we don't find anywhere where ancient kings are compared to falling stars, but they are compared to the sun. And she sees the Ugaritic image of the Chthonic sun as lying behind Hillel in Isaiah's taunt song. Now, Chthonic just means something that inhabits the netherworld or the underworld. And you can see that, you know, when the sun rises, where does it come from? Well, it's coming from the netherworld. It traverses the sky and then it sets back into the netherworld. From a phenomenological point of view, a pre-scientific point of view, this is maybe a completely logical way to describe the sun's movement, where it goes and where it comes from. So she thinks that Isaiah is playing upon this image. She believes that Isaiah is using this sort of mythology of the sun and its relation to the underworld, but that Isaiah subverts the traditional understanding of the sun in this realm. She says, for all its assertions, it is only Yahweh who rules the heavens, earth, and underworld. The sun may traverse the heavens and descend to Sheol, but for the author of this Isaiah passage, only Yahweh has power in either realm. And whether she's correct in all that or not, I think what she is correct about is Hillel having reference to the sun. It makes a lot of sense, and it actually explains the movement of the taunt song in Isaiah, that he will ascend to the heavens above the stars of God, set his throne on high. He'll sit in the mount of the assembly. He reaches the farthest north. He will ascend to the heights of the clouds. He will make himself like the Most High. But of course, he doesn't just descend into Sheol. Isaiah says, you are brought down to Sheol. So unlike the sun, which rises and then sets all on its own, this king rises up in all of his hubris and all of his pride, and God brings him down into Sheol, to the far reaches of the pit. So Hillel most likely does have reference to this celestial body, the sun, to its course in the sky. And Isaiah does seem to subvert the whole metaphor, because this king will not set on his own, but rather God brings him down. It's Yahweh who has power over the kings of the earth. So here we have what I think is a much more satisfying understanding of the metaphors in the taunt song, and perhaps some of the cultural baggage that lies behind it. Now, there's one more thing here. If Satan and his pride are not in view, if we might even say that if there are some parallels to Ugaritic myth, let's say that they aren't primary, what else could Isaiah possibly be referring to? Now, what I think Isaiah is referring to when he speaks of Hillel, son of the dawn, is not necessarily pagan gods, but I think, and even if he does have some cultural myths in mind here, especially since he's speaking to or about a pagan king, I think he primarily has in mind the greatest hubris in the history of the world. And that's not Satan's hubris. It was Adam's hubris. It was Adam in the garden who was really the day star, the son of the dawn. It's interesting what we read in Augustine, that Augustine says, how much more than is this angelic nature, which surpasses in dignity all else that he has made, the handiwork of the Most High. But is that true? I think Augustine's mistaken. The angelic nature doesn't surpass in dignity all that God made, because no angel was ever made in the image and likeness of God. Nothing surpasses the dignity of human beings. In all of God's creation, nothing is more glorious than humankind. Because God made man, God made humankind and only humankind after his image and his likeness. Who is the day star, the son of the dawn? Who is the crowning achievement of all of God's creation? Who, after he made him, God looked at all the works of his hands and said, "It is very good." It was man. It was humankind. So in the garden, when Adam is tempted, it was Adam who said in his heart, "I will set my throne on high. I will ascend to heaven. I'll sit in the mount of the assembly in the far reaches of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. And, echoing the lie of the serpent, I will make myself like the Most High." The serpent says to him, "In the day that you eat of it, God knows that your eyes will be opened, and you will be as Elohim, knowing good and evil." But what did Adam find? Did he ascend to the heights of the clouds? Did he find himself sitting on the mount of the assembly? Did he have a throne in heaven? No. Rather, it was as God said, "In the day that you eat of this, you shall surely die." Or as Isaiah puts it, "But you are brought down to Sheol, to the far reaches of the pit." So, to return to our original question, did Satan fall from heaven? Well, not in Isaiah, he didn't. Well, I hope you've enjoyed listening to this podcast as much as I've enjoyed making it. And if you have any questions of your own, man, I'd love to hear from you. Write to me at detective@biblegumshoe.com. That is detective@biblegumshoe.com. If you have any thoughts or feedback or questions, just write to me at detective@biblegumshoe.com. Until next time, this is Nicholas LeMay, your resident Bible detective, signing off.